And I think we are live. We're getting there. Yeah. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Happy to have you as always. Yeah. Dana and I do this streaming for those of you who are new around here. We do this stream weekly, usually, and we alternate channels. So we're here this week. Next week, we'll be back over at Dana's channel, which is Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. And you can find Dana all around the internet at Thrive After Abuse, including her support group on Facebook and website, thriveafterabuse.com, so on and so forth. Okay, good. I'm muted. I was afraid that I was going to hear myself talking. Anyway, So we thought we'd start off today by asking a question or answering, starting a question, answering a question that we saw, I found in the SPAN support group on Facebook. And what the question was is, what do you say when friends and family tell you, just get over it and move on after you've been in a relationship with a narcissist? So this is a very difficult topic, I think, but it's something that we do need to talk about. I've talked about it in previous videos, and I know we've talked about it various times, but it's a really valid question, and it does happen because, at least in my experience, what I saw a lot of was that one where they say, you know, why don't you just move on already? Or, oh, if it's so bad, why don't you just leave already? You know, which is a whole other ball of wax. So, Dana, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, like you said, Angie, I think we've all heard this and we all realize this is not helpful. This is the equivalent of telling a really angry person to just calm down, or telling an alcoholic to just not drink, or, you know, it's overly simplistic advice, and nobody wants to be hung up on their ex. Nobody wants to kind of relive the trauma and dealing with all the nightmares and the anxiety and the depression and the low self-esteem and all of this. This is not something that a person's willingly doing. So, you know, I think when people offer this kind of advice or these types of like platitudes, it's coming from a good place, but it's also coming from a place of limited understanding. And so if we can understand that they're, this is kind of the best advice that they know how to give. And I think everybody's said it. This kind of stuff is not taught in our culture, and there's all kinds of well-intended bad advice or unhelpful messages that are given when a person loses somebody. You know, the whole kind of, you know, oh, if you're feeling sad, you know, basically go cry in the other room. Right. We don't want to see you cry, or you just need to man up or grow up or put your big girl panties on, and, you know,
or big boy panties.
Yeah. Right. You know, like, you just need to deal with it, or time heals all wounds, or there's so many, or you should be happy. You should be happy that relationship's over because that person was so abusive or so toxic. And the reality is, all of those statements, even though they might be well-intended, they're very minimizing and invalidating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you put the dog whistle thing on top of it, right? Because there will be times when people will literally think, I've seen situations where like family members of individuals like my clients or people here on YouTube or in the other groups, they'll go with the narcissist and leave the person who was abused out in the cold because they believe the lies, or, you know, they're so entrenched and so involved that they literally fall for whatever lie is being told. I just saw a story about this in SPAN yesterday about a woman who is literally in fear of arrest because she's accused of stalking when she literally didn't even know they were accusing her of it, much less do it, you know? And so it's crazy the things that, but the dog whistle I was going to talk about really quick, where they appear to not be abusing you or not be in any way negative, but it's kind of like you could see, you know, from across the room, you might notice a certain look on their face or a certain behavior that makes you know either you're in trouble when you get home or they're over there flirting with someone else or whatever it is, you know what I mean, depending on the relationship. And you feel uncomfortable and upset and scared if it's about you're in trouble when you get home or whatever. And nobody else sees it or understands why you're kind of flipping out. Can you relate to that at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that makes it even harder for people to see it, because they'll say, well, you know, he was doing this at the party, or she was doing that at Christmas that time or whatever. And they're like, what are you talking about? They seem perfectly nice to me. And so unless, you know, in many cases you see it, they're so good at hiding the bad stuff and showing only the good stuff to the sort of outsiders, that the outsiders really do start to think you're the crazy one. And that is, in my opinion, it's like further, it's abusing an abused person, you know, an already abused mm-hmm. person. And so, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to think about it too, is the sad reality is that most people, I would think it's fair to say, even if the abuse is like a dog whistle level, right? It's like the kind of these subtle, underhanded messages that are only meant for the target. Even if it was really overt, outright type abuse, you know, throwing a cup of coffee in somebody's face or calling them a name or shoving them, that kind of stuff gets minimized and denied and glossed over too.
Yeah.
So really, it's amazing the level of denial that goes on as a whole. So,
and the invalidation of that, you know.
Yeah. Well, what did you do to cause this?
Right.
Or they're having a bad day or a bad week or a bad childhood or, you know, something else was going on that caused them to react like this. And if you're from a dysfunctional family, there's a lot of that. Well, then what did you, this level of hyper accountability of what did you do to cause this? And then the result of that is, you know, a person spends all kinds of time trying to anticipate and plan for how to not set off a certain person. But the thing is, it just depends on what mood they're in is what's going to set them off. And so then the target is spending all kinds of energy trying to keep their environment predictable. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. It's no way to live.
I totally with you. I did that for the first many years of my life, including, yeah. I mean, and worse in the, well, I don't know if worse is true, but in the adult relationship where I was with a narcissist, it was a constant battle. Growing up, it was just a way of life, you know, mm-hmm. but then when I was in the really, I couldn't believe some of the behaviors. And so I thought, well, that's not normal, but if I do this, then he doesn't do that. So then I can, you know, but then eventually I realized it wouldn't matter. And like you said, it's exhausting. You can't live like mm-hmm. that. You just can't. So
yep. Yeah. Yeah. So basically it's the whole guess what I'm thinking and feeling game.
Yes.
You know, oh, you guessed wrong.
Yeah.
<It's on. laughs> now you're being punished because you guessed wrong and you should just somehow know.
Yeah.
You should somehow know that I, you know, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's so immature and so ridiculous. Yes. Here's a good comment in the chat from UNA who says, with regards to other people saying, oh, you just need to move on. She says, you know what? They're not asking you to move on. They're asking to not be involved.
That's right.
I get them getting tired. So I come here where there is understanding.
That's why we're here, honey. You know, that's why we're here. But it's true though. And it, and I think a lot of people don't understand why so many survivors like ruminate and why we keep overthinking it and why we wonder and we doubt and we question. And that's, again, it's all those mind games. It's that trauma bonding. It's that we feel connected to someone who we know is a horrible person, or maybe I shouldn't say that. We know it's someone who treated us horribly. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we know that we shouldn't logically want to be with them sometimes, but we just miss them. And that's confusing to people. You know, and a lot of people say, well, I would never put up with that. Guess what? I was one of those people. I said, I would never put up with that. Mm-hmm. And just like everybody else who is probably here right now on some level, I did, because I didn't really fully understand what I was in the middle of when it was happening, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I hope we can help to alleviate on some level by doing what we do, right? By spreading awareness or whatever. But at the same time, there's this, it's very difficult to see from the inside, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I was thinking of like a, you know, like a, those, you know, churches that have beautiful stained glass windows. If you're inside of a church with stained glass windows and it's dark outside, you can't see anything. And if you're outside and it's light outside, you can't see the beauty of those things. But if you, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But they're there. I don't know if I'm making sense. Anyway. So I kind of,
here's another good example here. This is from Anja, who says explaining narcissists is like explaining bullying. What happens, don't show how it is to deal with it. I'm not sure what that part means, but the explaining narcissists is like explaining bullying. There's so much truth in that. So the person on the receiving end of it, you know, the person doing the bullying might do something. They might even say something like, oh, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. Right. And then you're trying to explain to this other person how you're absolutely terrified. And when you're trying to explain it, you're realizing, like, you're very aware of the words that are coming out of your mouth and how over dramatized it's sounding. And right. then you even become more frazzled. You're like, no, this is a big deal. But they said this, but this is what, you know, their body language. And I know this is what they mean and da, 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 da. And to other people who haven't seen it or who aren't on the receiving end of it, you know, their reaction, and this is where it can get so dangerous with people who are not familiar with this, other mental health professionals, life coaches, you name it, where they'll try to walk you through and be like, oh no, these are these disempowering beliefs. You know, like, what do we know is true versus like the narrative that you've created around this. Yeah. And that's kind of this unintentional, but kind of clinical form of gaslighting.
Yeah.
That happens. And it's so toxic.
Incredibly. I totally agree. Lovey says they also compare other types of abuse and say, see, that's not happening to you. What are you complaining about? And I did that to my darn self. I told myself, well, I'm not being hit, so it's not that bad. It's not that serious, because I did get hit growing up. And mm-hmm. so I thought, well, nobody's beating me, you know, mm-hmm. so I'm fine, you know, and that's outdated and a misunderstanding, I think, in my, because, you know, somebody is like, so let's say somebody's got a little knife and they're just kind of scratching on your skin a little bit with it. And it's hurting and they keep digging in deeper, but it's taking a long time or whatever. And you're like, well, at least I'm not just cutting my arm off. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, just because, and that's maybe a bad example. My point is, just because it's not worse than it is, doesn't mean it's really bad. And we know that psychological abuse, emotional abuse, you know, they say, oh, they leave more scars. I'm here to tell you that physical abuse leaves its own kind of emotional scars. Mm-hmm. But when you throw, you know, gaslighting and, you know, other types of, you know, projection, all the other stuff in there, like especially the gaslighting, which I think it's connected to everything. But anyway, it's way deeper, and it's like, you know, they say a mind F. I don't want to say that F word on my channel, but mm-hmm. you know, it is. I mean, it's that serious, I think, sometimes. And I think the longer we are in a relationship with these people, the less we even recognize the level to which we change ourselves for them, and the things that we start to believe about life and ourselves and them as a result of it. You mm-hmm. know, so it is difficult to explain to people who don't get it, because we end up in this almost cult. Well, you know, you were the one that actually brought this to my attention the first time, Dana, the first time we ever talked on one of these streams, when you said they were like, narcissists are like cult leaders. And it's the truth. And since you're the one who gave me that concept in the first place, talk about it a little bit, you know, I did make videos on it, but I want to know your thoughts, because your thoughts were so interesting on that, if you want to. You didn't cut your hair, did you?
No.
It's okay. Just, I'm just making sure.
Back. Yeah. No.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you get a very, you know, manipulative, highly persuasive person. They don't even have to be charismatic. A lot of times they are, but sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
You know, but they can, their persuasiveness or their insistence on their version of the truth being true, normal, decent people often mistake that for honesty, mm-hmm. you know, but really it's shamelessness.
Yes.
It's the shamelessness that's found in narcissism and psychopathy. So that's part of it too. And then also, you know, you're getting, And that's if they know, they truly know they're in the wrong, you know, but a lot of times they do these mental gymnastics to convince themselves that they didn't do anything wrong. So that's when it just takes it to a whole different, I mean, you're just dealing with a deeply dysfunctional, pathological person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not reasonable to expect for them to have reasonable behavior.
Right.
So a lot of it is just for us readjusting our expectations and realizing this is deep-seated behavior, and it's not just one or two things. Like, it's a lot, and it's across the board, and yes. It didn't start with you, and it's not going to end with you. And therapy, frankly, by and large, is not going to help. And I'll tell you something, even if and this goes for anybody, myself included, we are all very limited to the insight we have about ourselves. We all have major blind spots to our personality and to what's working and not working for us. So for a person even to go into therapy and it's just them, they're only going to be able, assuming that they're really there wanting to do the work and willing to talk about these issues, which most people aren't, they're still going to have major, major, major limitations. So I see people all the time, oh, this person's gotten into therapy or this, that, and the other. Okay, well, that doesn't matter, frankly. That's interesting. But be clear about your deal breakers and what kind of changes you need to see and in what time frame, because then you'll have the clarity that you're looking for. Because I've known people, I think like many of us have, who've been in therapy for 10 plus years and the needle hasn't moved at all. For them, or it's moved in other unrelated ways that aren't going to make having a relationship to any degree with them workable. So,
yeah, 100%. I totally agree. I think something that comes up a lot of the time too is I just want to tell people you don't have to explain everything to everybody in general. You know what I mean? Because people say, well, you know, people ask me what happened and then they don't understand. And it's very often it's very difficult to explain an experience like that because it is so, when you say the things individually, like, well, he looked at me funny at a party. Like, what's that supposed to mean? You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like I've talked about the time that my mother ordered the pizza with everything on my birthday, even though she knew I did not like everything, you know, and I asked her why. And she said, well, I didn't know what everybody liked, but she most definitely knew what I liked, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you tell somebody that, they're like, well, you know, so what, your mother, you know, your mother ordered pizza, but it's the subtle invalidation that goes along with it that I was using as an example, you know what I mean? And it felt like a big deal to me at 13, you know? So, you know, we have a super chat from T-Man. Hey, T-Man, welcome. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That says, which one is worse, the male covert narcissist or the female covert narcissist? I mean, I don't really think that you can personally, I think they are both pretty bad. I don't know that one is worse than the other. I think maybe I would say the female only because she's more likely to go under the radar, because a lot of times these women are mothers and people are, well, that's just a mother. She's just being a mom. You know, that's just how moms are. And that's not true. I'm a mom. I'm not like that. You know, but I'm just, that would be my best answer if I had to choose one. But they're both pretty terrible, or can be. Yeah. Dana, thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, I would agree, absolutely agree with that. Women do tend to fly under the radar a lot more often. And if they do get sentenced for anything, their sentences tend to be shorter and lighter than men. On the flip side, men tend to be deadlier. So
true.
A lot of the more like pathological, kind of obsessive stalking type things, you know, it's like significantly male. So I guess it depends on how, you know, what kind of criteria are we measuring? What are we measuring here as far as what makes something worse or best or better? But yeah, I think it's more about the behavior than the gender. So that's the main focus, 'cause you know, women can be deadly, and this behavior transcends gender. So it's, and here's the other thing too, with traumatic experiences, all any of us can ever do is feel our own trauma. And when we feel that trauma, we feel it 100%. So it doesn't matter if this person, if a car accident, let's say, you broke your ankle versus, somebody else who lost their leg, it doesn't make your ankle hurt any less. So even if we could quantify it and say, well, yes, this is more significant than this other thing, losing a leg is more significant than breaking an ankle, in many ways, it's irrelevant because we can't experience the pain of the other person. We can only experience our own. So if your life is deeply impacted by the behavior of somebody else, you're going to experience that 100% regardless. So yeah. It's yep. still significant, I guess, is what yep. I'm saying.
Well, just like Jerry says here, he says, unfortunately, people who have not experienced it think we sound mad as Scientologists explaining what thetans are. Or thetans, thetans.
Yeah.
That's great. I like that. And that's true. Yeah, that's true. And that's the unfortunate thing. I see Misty Dawn in the chat today. Hello, Misty. She's our legal expert over at Queen Being. She helps with all that stuff. Hey, cool. Misty. Yep. Okay. Let's see here. I just saw a really great comment I wanted to pull out. Okay. Crystal says, the covert narcissist I was married to didn't consider his efforts to push me out of bed at night after spinal surgery was abused because he wasn't hitting me. And I wanted to bring that up because we were talking about, you know, the different levels of abuse, but also because that is evidence of, on his part, a high threshold for what he considers abuse. But we also, as people who may or may not have been codependent at one point or another in our lives, because I don't want to assume everyone is or has been, but we do that. We have a high threshold for abuse as well. And I think it's really important that we recognize that, because often, this is a little bit off topic, but I just want to address this really quick. Often we find this, I find that people will tell me things that have happened to them and act like it's nothing. And I'm shocked still after all that, you know, people will say, I'm just, you know, like this example here, pushing mm-hmm. you out of bed when you at night after you've had spinal surgery, which could probably, I mean, at least disable you, if not kill you, right? Depending on how you fall, I guess, how far and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's abusive. Of course it is. But when you're in the middle of it, Crystal here, she probably didn't even fully understand it, and maybe she did, but a lot of times I didn't understand mm-hmm. in the moment when stuff was happening that it was as terrible as it was. And yet if someone else had told me, you know, hey, you know, this is happening in my life, I would instantly say, that's abuse, are you kidding me? You know, it's sometimes mm-hmm. I guess my point is, for ourselves, we tend to minimize anything that looks like abuse to us or that could be abuse to us, and we, at least when we're in the middle of it. And I think that's really important, and it's part of the reason that I do, and I think why you do as well, Dana, what part of what we do when we share information about, hey, this is how you recognize abuse, because people don't. People just think something's wrong with them. That's how I found out about all this in the first place back in the day, because I was researching what was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And then I found that it was not me. It's a long story. But anyway, I'll tell you another day.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the crazy making thing of it all, because not, you know, we can only do a person can only do the best they can with the information they have. And the added challenge to that is if everybody around us is operating from that same mindset of, oh, we're just going to continue to excuse behavior, bad behavior, and make light of it because commitment's forever, marriage is forever, you know, all relationships take work, or all these other kind of pieces of well-intended bad advice.
Yeah.
Then everybody's justifying it. But then the absolute maddening part of it is finally when if we get to that point where we finally do leave, then a lot of times it's those same people that are like, well, why did you wait for so long? Or you just need to hurry up and get over this person, or all kinds of just damaging and invalidating and minimizing. It's crazy. That part's crazy making. They're telling you, oh no, everything's fine, it's not a problem, it just needs work, you need therapy, they need therapy, you need couples therapy, you know, you need religion, you need rehab, you need all these things, and then it still doesn't work, and then it's sort of like, oh well, what's wrong with you that you stayed for so long?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I give up. Like, but I think the big takeaway in that is the importance of thinking for yourself and being able to validate yourself of if it's an issue for you, then it's an issue and it either gets resolved or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then what? And to not look to outsiders for confirmation that you're making the best decision for you, because they don't have to live with the results.
Exactly.
You know?
100%. Yeah. Now, this is a really good question from Michelle. Do you mind if I pull it out?
No, go for it. I have one after you, though.
Dude. Perfect. Okay. Michelle says, I would really like a healthy way to respond to people who make accusations of playing the victim. I asked someone not to curse at me, and they told me to quit playing the victim, please and thanks. This is a great question. My initial answer is wrong, and I'm going to tell you anyway. It's, well, then quit playing the aggressor. But in that case, but that's the wrong answer, I think. Dana, thoughts?
Actually, I like that. I think okay. It calls it out onto the mat, you know, then quit attacking me.
Right. Exactly.
You know, yes. you're coming at me sideways, mm-hmm. you know, cussing at me, being aggressive like that, then I'm not playing the victim if you're actually attacking me.
Right. And asking a person not to curse at you is not playing the victim. That's actually standing up for yourself. Just saying. That's not playing the victim.
This is the kind of mental gymnastics and crazy making that you deal with these kinds of people. Like they, in their mind, they are just always right.
Oh yeah.
And it's exhausting. There is no, the only strategy to have with this kind of nonsense is just to get distance from it. So you can have, functional or dysfunctional comeback, whatever you end up going with, it's not going to matter because they're still going to think that they're in the right and that you're overreacting, because that's the part of that narcissism. They cannot, will not see their part in it.
Right.
And they will not sincerely own it. And this is why this behavior keeps happening. So,
it happens to where, like, I can't tell you how many times I've, over the years, I dealt with, you know, with growing up, it was, I was once pushed in a negative way that caused me to go down the stairs and hurt myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I cried, because that's what people do when they're in pain. And, I was told that a similar line to that. So, I was not playing the victim. I was hurt, you know, and of course I couldn't at that time stand up for myself in any way because I was not allowed to. But there was certainly, So no, I guess that's my point.
No. And another way to kind of take that, another comeback to that would be, if they say something, okay, so they cuss at you, you say, hey man, don't talk to me like that. Like, I don't appreciate being talked to that way. Mm-hmm. And then, you need to quit playing the victim. If, when they come back, have some sort of comeback to your boundaries, and you know, the issue here is not communication, right? That's, it's not right. Explaining to them why it's not okay to cuss at another person. They know that.
Right.
And anybody over in school age, by the age of 6 years old, knows this. Okay.
Right.
And if they truly don't know it, then you've got much bigger issues, much bigger yes. fish to fry here, and
indeed.
Just back away from that person. But to tell them, you know, I've decided that I am no longer going to argue with fools. So then if they keep trying to engage with you, well, what do you mean? Are you calling me a fool? All you do, then you make it a point to not argue with them. No, I'm not. Oh, well, you think you're better than me? If you think that, that's what I think. And so that's kind of, you're still winning, right? Because you've made it clear, I'm not going to argue with fools. So if I'm not arguing with you, then I think you're a fool.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep allowing you to think that you're right, and I'm going to agree with everything you say.
I love that. I would add, don't do that with a physical abuser. But
100%.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. I was thinking that right when I ended that, of be wary about that, because you don't want to be kicking a bee's nest and put yourself in major harm's way.
And I mean, my research and understanding is narcissists, the majority aren't, but they are, there are those who are. And of course, there are those who never did and then they start, but you'll usually be able to recognize a violence in a person like that, like, you know, beforehand, up to a point, at least I was able to.
Well, and let's say you're uncertain. Okay. So with that approach, that's still one approach. If you can take out that I've decided to no longer argue with fools, you right. can just tell that to yourself and not yes. say that out loud. And then you just agree with everything that they say.
Yeah.
When it takes two people to argue. And so when you diffuse it by not arguing and getting into that with them, they don't, it takes the wind out of their sails.
100%. Excellent. Yeah. And this is similar. It's similar to Gray Rock, sort of, but it maybe has a little more sass to it, which I always enjoy. You know, if you think of it, I found when I practiced similar tactics, when I realized what was happening and I tried Gray Rock or something like it, it was very powerful and I felt powerful in the moment because I was so used to not having any power in that relationship. And then trying those things was pretty shocking and, mm-hmm. and awesome. It felt really, really good. So we have a question from, go ahead and we have a super chat. So
well, let's do the super chat and then we'll get to my question.
Okay. This is from Gabby Gumshoe, super cute name. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Gabby, for the super chat. She says, how would you feel if your narcissist lawyer told your attorney that you need to facilitate a relationship, even though they weren't really trying to have a relationship with your kids? How would I feel? I would feel like I would tell my attorney to tell their attorney all about themselves. I don't think you're required to facilitate any relationship if they're not trying to have a relationship with your kids. But I guess I would say whatever I needed to say to get through it. And then just as long as there was no legal mandate as such, I would probably just move on. But what about you, Dana?
I guess I'm a little confused. The attorney saying that you need to facilitate a relationship with who? With the kids or with your ex?
I assume the ex. Maybe it is with the kids. Let me see. Gabby, can you let us know? Let's see. Oh, my ex literally went from not even asking to see his kids, why they don't want to see him, to hiring an attorney. Hasn't even asked why they don't want to see him. Control is the only answer. That's something else about that.
Well, I'll go ahead and just start giving my answer if you get more information. Yep. Mm-hmm. If they're saying, okay, you need to facilitate a relationship with your ex because they want to see the kids, then I would say, yes, you're absolutely right. We do need to facilitate a relationship so we can get on the same page with parenting. Mm-hmm. Here is a third party app that we can do that through.
Yes.
And then I would have your attorney give them that third party app and everything is documented through that. If they say, oh, you need to facilitate a relationship with the children they're trying to paint you as a picture of as a bad parent, when they're the ones that don't want anything to do with the kids, the answer would be the same. You're absolutely right. I would love to improve, our parenting plan. Let's get this third party app and we'll work on it through there.
Yeah, this is really strange. It says, her ex is already married to another narcissist and who's more of a narcissist than her ex. And he allows the narcissist wife to fight the battles. And also earlier, she mentioned something about therapy. She has been in therapy. Oh, his attorney is saying she needs to, we got that. Your attorney is saying, or his attorney is telling your attorney that you're the one who has to facilitate it. And I think, in a normal, healthy situation, that would mean that, you know, that you would be the custodial parent. And so therefore you would be the one who would do the make arrangements and with him, I guess. But I agree with Dana 100%. And I've even done videos on that in the past about how you can use a court approved third party app and they're out there. Just go Google it. There's some on Queen Bee, links on Queen Being to those things as well. So definitely something you should consider if that's an option. I'm going to see if Gabby said anything else here.
And I would encourage anybody listening to this, you set the pace of this.
Yes.
Okay. So your ex is going to, they're going to whine, they're going to cry, they're going to argue, they're going to throw a freaking adult temper tantrum. They're not going to want to do this because it wasn't their idea.
That's right.
Right. So, oh, maybe this app costs money, or it's going to cost money to go back to the attorney. They're going to say, why can't we just settle it? Why can't you just take me at my word? I'll just pay you child support directly. We don't need to go through the courts. I'm going to do it this way. Da, 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 da. Don't do it.
Right.
You know, no matter, even if your divorce is wonderful, don't do it. Things, people's memory gets confused. It just, third party app, get yourself out of it. That way you have a paper trail. Other people are involved. It just streamlines it and it decreases stress, and they can use it too. So if they're trying to, you know, nail you for something, you know what,
there
let's just, if there's an issue, let's, I want to deal with it and I want to address it. Let's use this third party app, paper trail, court approved, boom, 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 done.
Yeah. And there's a reason those exist. It's for situations like this.
Yes.
Know? Yeah. That's right. Right. Yep. I'm really sorry to tell you this, but we have another, not sorry, but we have another super chat.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Okay. Okay. We'll do this one really quick. Okay. This is from Charlie, who says, I suffer with Asperger's. I have a difficulty controlling my anger. I grew up in a broken home. Parents and siblings were narcissists. I was the scapegoat and my Asperger's was always used against me. Mm. And I can imagine that would be very difficult. I don't see a question, but I'm trying to see if there is one that I'm, Dana, what are your thoughts on that while I look for a question?
Well, I think that, I guess my heart goes out to you. I can only imagine how, just frustrating and invalidating and enraging that must have been, and kind of makes sense as to why that there's some difficulty controlling anger. Mm-hmm. You know, to be chronically invalidated like that all growing up is going to cause a lot of unresolved anger.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, here's another detail from Charlie. He says, I was the most sane, honest, and creative one in the family, but I was made to feel less than and unworthy due to my Asperger's, which was used against me. Yeah, I absolutely can relate to that. I mean, I don't think I have Asperger's, but I definitely was that kid, the one that was different and weird. And I was accused of being bipolar and even medicated for it. And I am not bipolar and never have been. So, and I'm not just saying that, I have proof of it, you know, diagnosed proof of that I'm not. So it's messed up, the things that they'll do. And it's feeling unworthy is, I think, a large part of why we end up in relationships with toxic people as adults later, you know, because we go through so much invalidation. I personally spent so much time trying to even feel like a real person. I didn't even feel human, like on the same level as other humans. I know that sounds stupid, but I didn't. And so I get that. I get it. And I don't know if I was more sane or less sane than anyone else in the family, but I certainly knew that I was not as important or as good as them. And so I think feeling that unworthy, Charlie, is what I think why a lot of us get stuck in those adult relationships when we do.
100%. Well, and if you remember, if anybody out there is a fan of the old Twilight Zone show, there is an episode, this was back from, gosh, it's one of the earlier episodes, where there's a woman, she's surrounded by doctors and nurses. She's getting some sort of surgery. She feels incredibly, she's getting all of this work done because she's so hideous, right? And then at the end, kind of the grand unveiling is, oh no, she's not actually hideous. She's beautiful, but everybody else in the society is hideous. And they have just kind of these like melty looking faces. And that's kind of how it's like when you're the most functional member of a dysfunctional family. Everybody's like, God, you're so messed up. You're so crazy. You're so this, you're so that. And you grow up thinking, oh my gosh, I am so fundamentally flawed and broken. And then you get out of that family or that society and you realize, oh my gosh, no, it's them. Right. Like there's, you know, I'm a reasonably functional person. It's them. And that's very eye-opening. And so I'm so glad that you can see that now, Charlie.
Yeah. And Charlie adds another bit of, here's his question. Mm-hmm. My question is, how would you advise me to control my anger even today when Asperger's makes whatever feelings you're having feel like they're multiplied by 10? And I would say this, I don't have Asperger's, like I said, as far as I know, but I am technically not neurotypical because I have ADD. So I'll tell you this much. I don't pretend to fully understand, and I can't say that I've done enough research that I can give you a fully accurate answer here. So this is a disclaimer. But for me, what I do is situations where I feel incredibly angry, which I think is warranted and justified in abuse situations and narcissistic abuse situations. And especially when, you know, for someone being used as a scapegoat on a consistent basis, it's exhausting and everything else. For me, one thing that I tend to do is I step back emotionally as much as I can. I ask myself, you know, but this is not in the moment. In the moment, you have to let your anger be a thing. If it happens, you're allowed to be angry. I think as long as you're not physically hurting anyone or actively emotionally striking out at people, that's positive. But I think there's more to it than, I think I would use pattern interrupts if you can. I would remove myself from the situation if I'm in face-to-face with the person. I would end the conversation if I was on the phone with them. And then would go on to whatever coping techniques work for me, which are pattern interrupts and reminder to, okay, I have an example. Yesterday I got very upset about a situation that does not directly involve me, but one that you know, the mama bear thing happens. Mm-hmm. And this was someone that I'm not going to go into any more detail than that, but it was one of those people that I gave birth to a while back. And something happened mm-hmm. that upset me for them, not at them. Mm-hmm. And I felt very angry. And I found this meme that said, mama bear is a cute way to say, it said, mama bear is a cute way to say, if you hurt my child, I'll cut you open and eat your insides. Mm-hmm. And I felt that. Okay. But instead of focusing on that, I started to think about, you know, the bigger picture and the things that, you know, I got into my thoughts about gratitude and feeling stronger and healthier, whatever, whatever. And I focused on what I could control and not what I couldn't control, et cetera. And for me, that was really, really helpful. So, but that's not, I think, a pattern interrupt in this case. So if you, for example, if you know, okay, I'm feeling triggered, then one thing I do is I go, nope, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to cancel it and instead focus on this. Yeah, I'm going to cancel that thought and focus on this affirmation of my true divine desire. And that I think something I do want, not something I don't. But in the moment, it's really tough for even me to give you a better answer than that. I think too much. But Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I like everything you had to say. I agree with it. I would encourage you to think about, are there any themes about where, when and how this anger comes out? So is it with the same types of people or is it the same types of situations? You know, kind of the benefit to having these extreme emotional reactions is it's a great kind of therapeutic tool to see what parts of us are unhealed that could use some work and some kind of tender loving care that we can address and the parts of us that need to be healed, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times with anger, especially if it's a repeating issue with certain people, mm-hmm. like you can hold it together just fine if you're around strangers or acquaintances, but if it's, you know, with family, Brené Brown has a really great saying that she uses. She calls it chandeliering, and it's basically being triggered. But you know, when your person, you hit a soft spot and a person just jumps up to the chandelier and they're holding on like a cartoon character. It's those, that level of emotional reactivity is very significant because that does tend to point out those parts of us that are unhealed and that are needing some attention and some love.
Yeah.
So I would start there, getting clear on is it certain types, you know, is it whenever you're invalidated or whenever, are there certain scenarios that cause you more anger and you have a harder time controlling it than others or what's going on?
Dana, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. Gabby Gumshoe, this is another super chat, said, you two are amazing. Angie, you're one of the people that helped me promote awareness. And the Brana Project is how I'm helping. Thank you.
Awesome.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I had another one from Allie, but I didn't see a, let me see if I can find it in the chat, from Allie, but it was just, I didn't see a comment. Thank you, Allie. It was $4.99. We appreciate you. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question. Okay. Yes. This question is from Janet, who
hi,
says,
Janet.
Yes, hi, Janet. I go block, unblock. I think it's going to be different. Maybe a real friend. How do I keep getting fooled again and again?
It is so hard because you're a nice person, because you want to believe the best in people. That's what I think. But what it comes down to is it's normal people don't treat people the way these people treat people. And so we shouldn't have to constantly be on the lookout, but it is what it is. They exist. We know that. And they know how to push your buttons. I don't know who your person is, but they do know how to push your buttons. Whether they installed them themselves or they've just played with them a lot. They know where they're at. They know how to push them, you know? So Dana, what are your thoughts?
Oops, yeah. I guess I would encourage you, Janet, to also think about, here's kind of my thought. When we tend to continue to revisit situations that are less than fulfilling, right? So these relationships that are sometimes good, but man, when they're bad, they're really bad. When we keep doing the same thing over and over again, especially with friendships, these kinds of things, it's often a sign that we're starved out for companionship. Mm-hmm. And we feel like we have kind of limited options out there. So it's sort of like, I'd rather go with the devil I know than the devil mm-hmm. I don't kind yeah. of a thing. So I would use this as a sign of, I would encourage you to expand your social support network. So cultivating other friendships in your life. There was a great saying by Mel Robbins that somebody told, we were talking about this earlier today, that people come in three groups. There's like a tree, there's leaves, there's branches, and then there's roots. And knowing who is who. So your roots are your supportive people. Your branches are there for you, but not to the level of the roots. And the leaves are seasonal. And that's so profound and so true, because we tend to get really hurt when we're thinking a leaf is a root.
Yes.
Right. And then our lives really start spiraling if we're treating our roots like leaves.
Right.
So getting clear on who are those root type people in your life. And if you don't have any, then also being clear of, oh my gosh, this person's a leaf type person in my life. And because I don't have any root people, I keep trying to convince myself that this leaf has the potential to be a root, and it doesn't. And so getting clear with yourself will help you, I hope, to be able to see it for what it is and to kind of reconfigure your expectations, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am with you on that.
Okay, I'm gonna scroll down. I am like way up here in the chat.
Yeah. I'm trying to see here. Okay. There's a lot of talk about a specific court case going on in the chat, and I'm going to let let that be for now, only because I don't want to cause any trouble since it seems to be an active case. Now, here's something that Julie said that I think is really interesting, and I like this. We've talked about it before. The emotional abuse is so subtle that over time you don't even know how you got there, like the frog that dies in boiling water. You know, where the frog gets, it's in the pot of water, it's kind of warm, kind of fun, they swim around, everything's cool, and before they know it, it's over and they're boiling, you know, and because it warms up slowly, it doesn't just happen, you know. I think that's a powerful visual. I think I even made a cartoon video about it one time, but it didn't get graphic, don't worry. But you know, I think that's really true. What are your thoughts about that, or do you have another comment for us?
I guess, can you repeat that? I'm sorry, I got lost in a question here in the chat.
Understood. Julie said the emotional abuse is so subtle that over time you don't know how you got there, like the frog that dies in the boiling water. And I think that's a really powerful visual of what this feels like, because a lot of people look at you and they go, I don't understand why you would let that happen to you. And you go, what do you mean? Because you don't really, it's not like it just starts off, you're being abused. If that was it, you would leave. You would never be with that person. You know, they hook you in first and they get you addicted like a drug, and then they start it. So anyway.
That's... Yeah. And I think, frankly, I think it's even worse than that, which is really scary, is, you know, we are all kind of indoctrinated into a wide variety of really damaging, messages about commitment and love and relationships. I mean, look at any romantic comedy out there, look at fairy tales. The roles for men and women are both incredibly damaging.
Yes.
And so even if you do grow up in this amazing home that with real kind of actualized parents who have, you know, boundaries and standards and deal breakers and assertive communication, the odds of you, you know, falling into a pothole when you step out the door, a pothole created by society, is huge.
Yes.
Because then you've got all of these other messages coming at you from religion, from movies, music, peers, friends, you know, all these other people. And so when everybody's subscribing to these messages about basically let's minimize everything bad that's happening to you because, oh, it could have been worse, or, you know, you should be happy, look on the bright side, get over it, all of this stuff. No wonder, no wonder. Frankly, I think the people that, you know, have gotten this far in life and that have had a lot of healthy relationships, by and large, I think it's just dumb luck. Frankly, it's not that they came from this amazingly functional home, because that's only a part of it. That's like 25% of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the dysfunction in the world needs to be accounted for too. And this stuff's not taught. And so frankly, it's, I really think, you know, you kind of got to, we all, unfortunately at this time in the world, you have to find out these lessons the hard way. Right. And to cut through all of those bad messages. And then you start creating a more empowered, accurate map of how the world works. Yep. And then you're well on your way. And that's kind of the upside to our situation is, okay, it's like the Matrix. Okay. Now your eyes are opened.
Yes.
You know? And
you can't unsee it.
You can't unsee it. And, but, you know, it doesn't have to be that you live in fear and that there's, you know, you have to eat gruel every day like they did in the Matrix, and that it's this awful life with a few raves here and then. You know, it doesn't have to be like
that. That's right.
It wasn't the Matrix, where everybody has to wear latex, you know, it doesn't
exactly have
to be, you know, but learning, basically it involves learning a new set of tools in our toolkit with how to navigate through life, and realizing, because the vast majority of society doesn't subscribe to this, that you're going to be that odd man out. Just like, I forget who it was that the guy in the super chat was saying, his family was like, oh, you're so, you know, you're so crazy, you're so this, you're so that. And he's the kind of the sanest one of the bunch.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it's exactly going to be.
That's right. That's right. Do you have a question for us?
I do. I have, well, it's more of a comment, I guess, from Ollie, who says, I feel at times intense physical pain, and I also have PTSD for all the things I've been through that have made me isolate completely, and I feel drained all of the time. He was the guy that had the super chat.
Oh, that we missed? Okay, cool.
And I don't know if that's part of it, but I feel like that's relevant. So
yeah, well, I'll tell you something. Well, that one didn't have a comment in the super chat. That's why I wasn't able. Okay. Well, thank you for finding that. So my thing is this, actually I'm in the process of writing a script, for a video, not a script, but like bullet points and stuff, and an article that I'm going to make, a video on this topic right now. Mm-hmm. So it'll be coming this week, but, Dana, read the question to me one more time, or the comment.
I feel at times intense pain physically. I also have PTSD for all the things I've been through that have made me to isolate completely, and I feel drained all of the time.
Yes. Yeah. So that, I mean, that says to me that, you know, first of all, I would definitely recommend going and seeing your doctor really quick when you get a chance, and just having a physical just to be safe that there's nothing wrong beyond emotional exhaustion, emotional, psychological abuse, all that stuff. It does affect you physically. PTSD affects you physically. And that's all of what you said are things that I have felt and still on occasion have moments of feeling, you know, but you can certainly do things to fix that. And there are a lot of different things you can do, but I would start with, just to be safe, go to the doctor, get yourself checked out, make sure you know, that everything is in order and that you're able to start self-healing. You know, I just think it's really important. Dana, what are your thoughts about that really quick?
Yeah. It's so difficult. Everything that you're describing, you know, it goes hand in hand with PTSD and grief and a lot of this unresolved pain from traumatic relationships. And it's going to be kind of moving through that. And it's easier said than done, but I would encourage you to, you know, to consider joining. There's support groups out there. Angie has one. I have one. You know, potentially meeting with someone, a trauma-informed, narcissistic abuse life coach or therapist or somebody like that that can work with you through this PTSD. Mm-hmm. One of the most, well, I think it's become like the most common modality for therapy, at least therapy wise, for PTSD is a therapy called EMDR, mm-hmm. which can really help. So
do your research though, because I've had a lot of people say they really struggled with some of the practices, and I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm saying do your research and make sure. Go ahead, Dana.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, I really do wonder about that when mm-hmm. I'd like to find out more of what people are talking about with the damaged, because EMDR is, it's not talk therapy. So there's no need to revisit the trauma. So I'm curious to know where things are going off the rails. And
Ollie added a comment here. He said, I did another comment up that explains this more, but he said it's worse and I'm on meds, but I can't help. So I'm going to see if I can find it.
Okay.
His other comment.
I'll scroll up too here.
Let's see.
Sue. Okay. I'm going to move on to Sue while we're looking for Ollie's. Sue says, can you please speak about the reason why you can't get closure with a narcissist? Well,
yeah, go ahead, Dana.
Okay. Here's my two cents with it is I think it depends on how are we defining closure. So closure in my book is not something that another person gives us. It's what we give ourselves, and it's only done with action. Mm-hmm. So closure is something, it's not, I don't think there's any such thing as emotional closure. There's only emotional completion, but there is physical closure. Mm-hmm. So we can cutting off contact or ending the physical part of that relationship is closure. Then the next part is completion. So I think when most people talk about closure, they're talking about it in terms of, I need the truth. I need answers. I need some sort of resolution, right? I need them to apologize and to make amends and all of that. Well, we could say, if you kind of change around a few of these words, the reason you can't get closure with a narcissist is the same reason a person with Alzheimer's can't remember your name, right? Like this is their limitation.
Yes.
And
that's absolutely right.
It is what it is. It's frankly, it's not personal, even though the abuse feels so personal. If it hadn't been you, it would have been somebody else.
That's right.
Because it's them, and it will be. Yeah. Right. It's them. It's not you. Mm-hmm. You had the misfortune of being on the receiving end of it and being their, you know, emotional punching bag, mm-hmm. but their behavior speaks volumes as to where they are emotionally, yes. You know? I think seeing it that way can really help to realize this is their limitations and to expect them or to wish for something to be any other way is, you know, it's just delayed. I don't know, delayed regret or delayed grief, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I help a lot of people work through this directly. And the thing is, I think you've got to create your own closure. And one of the things, you were spot on when you said the motivation, why people want closure. Most of the people that I know that you know very well, but most people that I talk to say the same thing. They feel like they deserve an apology, or they just want to know the truth. I just need to know. And some people literally, they can't move on until they know for sure, or they believe for sure that that person is a narcissist. And I say, but does it matter what the diagnosis is? Because they obviously abused you and treated you really badly. And they go, but I just need to know. And I think that's, and I know for sure that part of that is because they want to make sure it's not them, that they're not the problem. And they go, okay, well, they found out that there are these people that act like this, and that they, you know, they seem very much like what they're dealing with. But then they're like, well, am I just putting that person in that spot because it makes me, this is how you know that person's not a narcissist, because we are likely to blame ourselves, aren't we? Because for me, I blamed myself because it was easier to fix me than to try to fix someone else. I tried to fix them. It didn't work. So that I turned inward and tried to fix me. But my point is, I think that one of the best ways to work through that is to do something that creates your own closure. I think we need to grieve those relationships. And I think a lot of us don't understand why, but we do. And it's directly because of, similar to a death in a way, but you're grieving the person that you signed up for, not the person you got, or the person that you wish you had if it was a parent or whatever. And then once you've grieved it, then you also have to release your need to be attached to it, which is very difficult. And there are different techniques I use with people for that. It's incredibly, it's very powerful and important to do that. So I wanted to really quickly, Dana, and then if you have another question or more thoughts, but really quick, I saw something. Somebody asked, where do you find the groups? They are on Facebook. Dana's is Thrive After Abuse. Mine is the Queen Being Spanily. For mine, you can also go to queenbeing.com/span, S-P-A-N, or /group-support, and find several different groups there. Dana, thoughts on that? On thriveafterabuse.com as well as Facebook? Is that where they can find it?
Yeah, we're refiguring our website group. Okay. But right now the Facebook group is the one that we have going. Just make sure that you're joining or participating in the Facebook group and not on the page.
Because that's important. Because
the page is open to the public. Yeah.
Also, another thing, Gabby said, can I use you above my referrals? I'm not sure what we mean, but if you would please just email me, that would be awesome. We could talk about it. angyatkinson@gmail.com. Okay. Dana, did you have a question or a comment?
Here is a great comment from Human Love Solidarity, who says great no name. Closure. I know, right? Who says no closure because there was not a relationship of reality.
I think from their perspective, from the narcissist perspective, it's about making you feel further invalidated. I think it's about feeling that they don't owe you anything from their perspective. I don't know that I can fully understand the reasons, but I also think one of the biggest reasons is they don't want closure, because if they keep the door open, then they might be able to come back when they need more supply from you or of your brand, you know what I mean? Your particular personal brand of it. So Dana, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think Human Love, you're right in so many ways, that the reality is when there is another person that has, who it has such pathological behavior, you are not sharing the same reality. And that's very difficult for, I think, any of us to understand, because we kind of think, well, you know, facts are facts. And, you know, this, like, we all have this certain agreed upon facts, right? Yeah. And it's weird when we realize, oh my gosh, no, this person has such a radically skewed perspective, or they're flat out lying about the facts, or they've lied and they've somehow convinced themselves that their lies are the truth. Or, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely wild. So realizing you're not sharing the same reality. So you're definitely not going to get some sort of closure that would be helpful because of that, because they can't give you the closure that you're looking for because they have a completely different reality.
Yes.
And perspective of what happened.
100%. Yeah. Oh, Peggy adds a good point. She says closure is often thought of as empathy and understanding. And if you really want the narcissist to have empathy, you'll never get it. And then another comment from Anja's being that, I guess narcissists are too much of an insensitive person to understand what they do to others. For them, it's only words and actions. And that's literally, I think, very often the case. They could, if they tried. We know that they have cognitive empathy, but they do not have compassionate empathy whatsoever. They don't care how you feel. They don't care how you feel. And so I agree with that as well. But yeah, I just realized we are a couple minutes over. Do you want to pull one more out, or do you have another one for us?
I guess let's do one real quick, and then I got to run.
Yeah, we can wrap now if you have to go.
No, we can do one more.
Okay, go ahead. Do you have one for us?
No? I can find one. Do you have one?
I'm looking too.
Okay.
Okay, let's see here. Well, we have, I don't know if that's going to be a whole other thing. Okay, listen, guys, while we're looking, let me just say this really quick. We're doing a thing where if you have a question or a comment that you want us to talk about in our next session, which will be Tuesday next week on Dana's channel, you should put it in the comment section below here. We will look back through the chat, but you should also, if you stick around until we wrap up for today, you should, or if you're watching on the replay, put it in the comments below, and we'll pick it up for the following week. All right, let's see here.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to add something. Here's a comment, but I wanted to add something to Madame. Mm-hmm. Katarina says, if you pursue trying to get closure with the narcissist, it's pretty much a guarantee that you will just end up in more pain. Mm-hmm. Try to accept that you're basically dealing with a robot. Mm-hmm. And yes, and I will say, although it sounds like, oh man, I really wish we could get this closure. I wish that we could get some apology or some acknowledgement. I have had an apology and acknowledgement, but it's also been just another level of the manipulation.
Yes.
So believe me, it doesn't help.
100%.
Because then it just throws you back to square one of, maybe this time is different. Maybe they really do mean it. Maybe they do get it. Oh gosh, what have I done? Have I driven away the most amazing person in my life? So it's not that fantasy of what, you know, that their acceptance and their apology, it is truly just that. It's a fantasy, and it really will set you back to level one. See the behavior clearly, use your boundaries and standards and deal breakers to interact. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, because you're absolutely right. They will further abuse you. I have only seen that people do the apology thing when they have an ulterior motive, when we're talking about a narcissist.
Oh, 100%. I can't, the damage with my relationship with Steve, you know, I don't think I've even shared this part of it before, but after everything came to the surface, he was living a double life. He was married. He was trying to get me to move back across the country to be with him when he had moved back in with his wife,
who I didn't
even know was still in the picture. And he would have been totally content for me to uproot my whole life and take on that expense. And I mean, the level of like just sickness within him. I had also, I had miscarried, and he was doing he was pulling at all of these heartstrings, sending me pictures of babies, talking about baby names. We can have our family. Da da da. He didn't. I mean, this is like a Lifetime TV movie. At this point, I realize his wife's still in the picture. Her and I are talking, and he doesn't know this. And so I'm texting her. I'm like, he's trying to get me to move all the way back there, talking about wanting to marry me. Like, I don't even know what this is. So crazy. This is like several levels, layers deep of crazy.
Wow.
I can't even. So the point is, yeah. Apologies.
You have a story to tell.
And girl, it's a three drink minimum type story. Like, it's
okay. Maybe we have an evening session one time. We bring a drink. I'm just saying. Because, wow. Okay.
Oh, it just goes on. It's just stupid. I mean, it just gets to the point.
Right, where Lifetime movie. Mm-hmm.
How is this my life? Like, this is something that happens on Dateline. Like,
thank God you're okay. I mean, oh my. Ridiculous. I mean that you're out of it anyway and safe.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that I didn't even know it was that. I don't know why I didn't know that. I know one of, anyway. Okay. Okay. Wow. Thank you, Dana, for that. Cause now I have more questions, but we'll get to that in the next session. Maybe.
Yeah, we'll have to have our like wine and
Right. We'll have a late night one or a late evening one. Everybody wine bring a glass of wine. Yes, I think that's a great idea, actually. If you're in for a wine live stream, let us know in the chat. Okay. All right.
This might have to be like members only because you
that's
know
valid.
Gonna sink it. Yeah.
Valid. Very important. Yes. I have a super chat from Ali who says Mai is at 2:30. I'm not sure what we mean, but thank you. all right. Dana, anything else?
I think that's it. And
So next week we'll be over on Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. And the following week we'll be back here, usually on Tuesdays at 12:30 Central Time. That's 1:30 your time, Dana?
Yes.
Eastern time. Mm-hmm. Okay, 12:30 Central, 1:30 Eastern-ish. If you want to sign up for text messages, if you're not getting your notifications from YouTube, you can go to just text Angie Live, all one word, to 33222, or just go to my channel and Dana's channel and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification. Dana, any final words of wisdom today?
Just fingers crossed for the election, you guys.
And that's don't want to get political. Say about that. Yes, I agree. Let's hope for the very best.
Yep.
Yes. All right. Hugs and love, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Dana.
Okay.
Bye. See you later.